Section 4. We are next confronted with issues of justiciability, standing, and abstention. Have Roe and the Does established that personal stake in the outcome of the controversy that ensures that the dispute sought to be adjudicated will be presented in an adversary context and in a form historically viewed as capable of judicial resolution? And what effect did the pendency of criminal abortion charges against Dr. Halford in state court have upon the propriety of the federal courts granting him relief as a plaintiff intervener? A. Jane Roe. Despite the use of the pseudonym, no suggestion is made that Roe is a fictitious person. For purposes of her case, we accept as true and as established her existence, her pregnant state, as of the inception of her suit in March 1970 and as late as May 21st of that year when she filed an alias affidavit with the district court, and her inability to obtain a legal abortion in Texas. Viewing Roe's case as of the time of its filing and thereafter until as late as May, there can be little dispute that it then presented a case or controversy and that, wholly apart from the class aspects, she, as a pregnant single woman thwarted by the Texas criminal abortion laws, had standing to challenge those statutes. Indeed, we do not read the appellee's brief as really asserting anything to the contrary. The logical nexus between the status asserted and the claim sought to be adjudicated and the necessary degree of contentiousness are both present. The appellee notes, however, that the record does not disclose that Roe was pregnant at the time of the district court's hearing on May 22, 1970, or on the following June 17th when the court's opinion and judgment were filed. And he suggests that Roe's case must now be moot because she and all other members of her class are no longer subject to any 1970 pregnancy. The usual rule in federal cases is that an actual controversy must exist at stages of appellate or certiorari review, and not simply at the date the action is initiated. But when, as here, pregnancy is a significant fact in the litigation, the normal 266-day human gestation period is so short that the pregnancy will come to term before the usual appellate process is complete. If that termination makes a case moot, pregnancy litigation seldom will survive much beyond the trial stage, and appellate review will be effectively denied. Our law should not be that rigid. Pregnancy often comes more than once to the same woman and in the same general population, and if man is to survive, it will always be with us. Pregnancy provides a classic justification for a conclusion of non-mootness. It truly could be capable of repetition, yet evading review. We therefore agree with the district court that Jane Roe had standing to undertake this litigation, that she presented a justiciable controversy, and that the termination of her 1970 pregnancy has not rendered her case moot. B. Dr. Halford. The doctor's position is different. He entered Roe's litigation as a plaintiff intervener, alleging in his complaint that he, quote, in the past has been arrested for violating the Texas abortion laws and at the present time stands charged by indictment with violating said laws in the criminal district court of Dallas County, Texas, to wit, 1, the state of Texas versus James H. Halford, number C-69-53071H, and 2, the state of Texas versus James H. Halford, number C-69-2524H. In both cases, the defendant is charged with abortion. In his application for leave to intervene, the doctor made like representations as to the abortion charges pending in the state court. These representations were also repeated in the affidavit he executed and filed in support of his motion for summary judgment. Dr. Halford is therefore in the position of seeking in a federal court declaratory and injunctive relief with respect to the same statutes under which he stands charged in criminal prosecutions simultaneously pending in state court. Although he stated that he has been arrested in the past for violating the state's abortion laws, he makes no allegation of any substantial and immediate threat to any federally protected right that cannot be asserted in his defense against the state prosecutions. Neither is there any allegation of harassment or bad faith prosecution. In order to escape the rule articulated in the cases cited in the next paragraph of this opinion, that absent harassment and bad faith, a defendant in a pending state criminal case cannot affirmatively challenge in federal court the statutes under which the state is prosecuting him, Dr. Halford seeks to distinguish his status as a present state defendant from his status as a potential future defendant, and to assert only the latter for standing purposes here. We see no merit in that distinction. Our decision in Samuels v. Mackell compels the conclusion that the district court erred when it granted declaratory relief to Dr. Halford instead of refraining from so doing. The court, of course, was correct in refusing to grant injunctive relief to the doctor. The reasons supportive of that action, however, are those expressed in Samuels v. Mackell and in Younger v. Harris, Boyle v. Landry, Perez v. Lethesna, and Byrne v. Carolexis. We note in passing that Younger and its companion cases were decided after the three-judge district court decision in this case. Dr. Halford's complaint in intervention, therefore, is to be dismissed. He's remitted to his defenses in the state criminal proceedings against him. We reverse the judgment of the district court insofar as it granted Dr. Halford relief and failed to dismiss his complaint in intervention. C. The Does. In view of our ruling as to Rose standing in her case, the issue of the Does standing in their case has little significance. The claims they assert are essentially the same as those of Roe, and they attack the same statutes. Nevertheless, we briefly note the Does' posture. Their pleadings present them as a childless married couple, the woman not being pregnant, who have no desire to have children at this time because of their having received medical advice that Mrs. Doe should avoid pregnancy, and for other highly personal reasons. But they fear they may face the prospect of becoming parents. And if pregnancy ensues, they would want to terminate it by an abortion. They assert an inability to obtain an abortion legally in Texas, and consequently the prospect of obtaining an illegal abortion there or of going outside Texas to some place where the procedure could be obtained legally and competently. We thus have as plaintiffs a married couple who have as their asserted immediate and present injury only an alleged detrimental effect upon their marital happiness because they are forced to the choice of refraining from normal sexual relations or of endangering Mary Doe's health through a possible pregnancy. Their claim is that sometime in the future, Mrs. Doe might become pregnant because of possible failure of contraceptive measures. And at that time, in the future, she might want an abortion that might then be illegal under the Texas statutes. The very phrasing of the Doe's position reveals its speculative character. Their alleged injury rests on possible future contraceptive failure, possible future pregnancy, possible future unpreparedness for parenthood, and possible future impairment of health. Any one or more of these several possibilities may not take place, and all may not combine. In the Doe's estimation, these possibilities might have some real or imagined impact upon their marital happiness, but we are not prepared to say that the bare allegation of so indirect an injury is sufficient to present an actual case or controversy. The Doe's claim falls far short of those resolved otherwise in the cases that the Doe's urge upon us, namely Investment Company Institute versus Camp, Data Processing Service versus Camp, and Epperson versus Arkansas. The Does, therefore, are not appropriate plaintiffs in this litigation. Their complaint was properly dismissed by the district court, and we affirm that dismissal. Section 5. The principal thrust of appellant's attack on the Texas statutes is that they improperly invade a right said to be possessed by the pregnant woman to choose to terminate her pregnancy. Appellant would discover this right in the concept of personal liberty embodied in the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause, or in personal, marital, familial, and sexual privacy said to be protected by the Bill of Rights or its penumbras, or among those rights reserved to the people by the 9th Amendment. Before addressing this claim, we feel it desirable briefly to survey in several aspects the history of abortion for such insight as that history may afford us, and then to examine the state purposes and interests behind the criminal abortion laws.